Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So it's the first full day of Boris Johnson's government and he has delivered a statement in the House. Here is what he had to say.
Too many people in this country feel that they have been told repeatedly and relentlessly what we cannot do. Since I was a child, I remember respectable authorities asserting that our time as a nation has passed, that we should be content with mediocrity and managed decline. And time and again, these are the sceptics and doubters, my friend. Time and again, by their powers to innovate and to adapt, the British people have shown the doubters wrong.
So, James, what was his message there?
His message essentially is the Tories' election pitch, which is Boris Johnson is confident, optimistic, and believes in Britain. Jeremy Corbyn is a naysaying doomster who sides with Britain's enemies, essentially. I thought today was striking because for all his rhetorical gifts, Boris Johnson has never had a kind of memorable performance in the House of Commons, I think until today, because he has always previously tried to adjust his speaking style to the House of Commons, and it's never quite worked. But today he just spoke in the Commons as he speaks elsewhere, and it was quite effective. I thought his opening statement was very full of kind of optimism about what Britain would be like in 2050. I think it was full of the opportunities of Brexit that would be familiar to any regular reader of Dominic Cummings' blogs, you know, science and technology and all that stuff. And Jeremy Corbyn gave quite a kind of lacklustre reply, I think it's fair to say. But it was then in response to Jeremy Corbyn that Boris Johnson really got going. He kind of went after John McDonnell as a man sacked by Ken Livingstone for being too left-wing. He attacked Jeremy Corbyn on national security, and which is something that Theresa May did quite often, but Boris Johnson managed to do it much more brio. And I think you could tell, I thought when Boris Johnson first entered the chamber, I was struck by the ambivalence of a lot of the Tory benches to his arrival. And I think you could tell that the noses put out of joint by last night's reshuffle were still out of joint. But by the end, they were shouting for more, because I think by the end, even a kind of barely Boris sceptic Tory MP could see that up against Jeremy Corbyn, that election, if it comes, could turn out to be an opportunity, not a threat to the Tories.
And as well, looking at the Labour response, so Jeremy Corbyn's statement in reply, we had various topics he went through, at one point suggesting that Priti Patel was the first, his Home Secretary of recent times, to be up for the death penalty. Did we get a good sense of how the Labour Party plans...
I think he's
plans...
a death penalty rather than being about to be executed, I mean.
Did we get a good sense of how a Labour Party plans to attack Boris Johnson on a campaign level?
It was a much less aggressive response than I was expecting, actually. I thought that it was going to be Corbyn being sort of angry and trying to be disapproving of Boris Johnson, but he was quite restrained. And he did, as you say, he mentioned capital punishment. He also demanded more details on when all this extra funding for public services was going to come forward. And he sort of focused on detail, actually, in his response largely to Boris Johnson, which, as James said, it sort of fell a bit flat because Boris Johnson was in campaign mode. And when he then responded to Jeremy Corbyn, he really, really went for Jeremy Corbyn in a way that made Corbyn look very weak because he hadn't gone for Boris Johnson in the same way. And then you saw Ian Blackford, the SNP's Westminster leader, who asked a sort of generic Ian Blackford question where he just sort of stood there and shouted, which is what he's been doing throughout Theresa May's premiership. So he didn't really deliver anything particularly incisive either. And you can see, as James said, the Tory bench is warming up behind Boris Johnson, thinking, oh, actually, you know, we've been pretty miserable watching these two not particularly great opposition politicians tear into our not particularly great Prime Minister over the past 3 years. Perhaps we're about to see something a bit more exciting from our new leader.
I also thought that Boris Johnson was lucky in the attack line that Joe Swinson went on. Yeah. I mean, there is a big opportunity in the Boris Johnson premiership for the Liberal Democrats in to try and pick up those Tory Remain voters. But Joe Swinson chose to push him on rights for EU nationals living in the UK, something that even the Theresa May government ended up saying that they would guarantee, and something that Boris Johnson's going to be very happy to answer on. I thought that was a very odd choice of question from her.
And we also managed to see Jeremy Corbyn almost find some common ground with Boris Johnson on the topic of EU citizens' rights, where Jeremy Corbyn appeared to praise, or at least say he was glad that Boris Johnson was planning to commit to those.
Yes, and I mean this is the kind of, I think, the kind of fairly easy bit of Brexit for Boris Johnson to do. I think there is very little political market in the UK for some kind of, you know, the idea of not doing that. I thought on Brexit, I was struck by two things. One, he repeated his line that a time limit on the backstop is not enough. And the second thing was, he seemed to be indicating that while the UK's negotiators were ready to talk wherever and whenever, that those negotiations would require the EU to signal a willingness to discuss alternatives to the backstop in the withdrawal agreement, which is quite a dramatic hardening of the UK position. It's essentially trying to put the ball in the EU's court and say, you've got to decide whether you want to talk to us or whether we're going to inevitably hurl towards no deal.
Now, we spoke about Boris Johnson's new government on the podcast last night, but we've had since then, and total of 17 ministers have left from Theresa May's government, and we have a host of new appointments. And as you touched on, James, it does seem that it hasn't landed universally well with the party if you looked at some of those faces at the start of that session. Isabel, how do you think this is sitting as the day goes on after that performance with Conservative MPs, such a radical change in government?
Well, I think they are aware that this is a new government. It's not just a new leader, that everything is changing in the Conservative Party, and that the way it approaches things is very different. Just that the tone that Boris Johnson struck in the chamber, one of sort of going for his critics before they'd even criticised him, criticising the doubters and the doomsayers, is clearly going to be, that's clearly going to be his line of defence against any quibble over detail or what he's up to, even if it's a perfectly reasonable one, that basically you're being negative, you're doing down Britain, something that the SNP are actually going to find particularly tricky, because that's exactly what they say when they're talking about Scotland. So you could see Tory MPs sort of waking up a little bit. I think they've grown used to crawling into the chamber for a bit of a boring time, and they realise that it is going to get a lot livelier. The question is whether there's going to be a group of sacked ministers who find that they have common cause, or whether actually things move so fast over the next few months and it's so Brexit focused that many of those ministers feel that they can't cause trouble for the Boris Johnson government because of their own positions on Brexit.
And indeed, on that note, we had today an absence at the first statement by Boris Johnson, with David Gawke, Greg Clark and Theresa May all opting to go to Lords instead.
They've been rewarded with a very good morning for England. The night watchman Jack Leach has scored a half century unbeaten, and England have knocked off their first innings deficit for the loss of just one wicket. So, yeah, this is all part of the energising of the country. Theresa May has obviously brought some good luck to the England team, having, you know, she was away yesterday and they were bowled out for a measly 85, but she was there on when they won the World Cup, and she's there this morning as they're having a much better day. Maybe she's found her natural vocation as the kind of lucky mascot of the England cricket team.
And finally, as well, just looking at the tactics today, the formation of the cabinet, which has no attempt to keep that Remain Leave balance, and also the multiple promises and personal promises, in fact, Boris Johnson made in his first speech outside Downing Street yesterday on Brexit, on social care. Do you get the sense that this is a government that believes they can really do all these things in 100 days? Or do you think this is a government that is really in campaign mode because they realise they might be going to the polls sooner rather than later?
I think they're largely in campaign mode, but they want to show a seriousness about doing something beyond Brexit as well, which is why Boris Johnson has been talking about it so much. But you could see him preparing the ground for certain things. So during his leadership campaign, he called for cross-party talks on social care. Today, he said to the Labour Party, in response to a question from Liz Kendall, Labour backbencher, if the party opposite is not interested, then we will fix it ourselves, which is, I mean, we know that the Labour Party is not interested in cross-party talks on social care. And I really don't think that Barbara Keeley, who's Labour's front bencher on this issue, is suddenly going to want to work with the Tories just because Boris Johnson's in charge. So you can see him preparing the ground for the Tories, saying, right, I don't think it'll be quite a crush the saboteurs kind of message, but it'll be we need a bigger majority now to get these things that we're really serious about done, because Labour's not going to work with us.
He's running an outside-in strategy, essentially. His plan is to campaign or act like he's in campaign mode all the time, hope that that is repaid with a big bounce in the opinion polls, and use that to put pressure on Parliament. I think they believe, and I think they're right on this, that if it looks like Boris Johnson would win an election, some of the parliamentary opposition to his Brexit strategy would subside. Because what would be the point in forcing an election if all that would happen in that election would be that Boris Johnson would win a mandate for the kind of Brexit he wants to pursue? And I also think, so I think that is what is going on. I mean, this is the strategy. And I think this is why we will see him doing a lot more of this popular domestic policies and kind of on the road campaigning, unlike kind of Theresa May, who sat in Downing Street kind of really kind of raking through the footnotes to chapter 34 of the briefing notes that she'd been sent. I think he is going to be out on the road a lot, and I think he's going to be making his case a lot, because I think he believes that he's got to kind of go over the heads of MPs to the country if he's going to get his Brexit through.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel.